I'll buy you a drink on Monday night.
Oh, thanks.
I'll buy you one. Yes, the nukes. I keep forgetting it's on.
You're going, right?
Yes. Yeah. Are you coming on Monday night, John? Are you working it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you on a table?
Fab. One wine will do it.
One wine will do it. Yeah.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the AO Show with me, John Hoovenaars. We're entering the awards season with the Newcomb Medal and the Australian Tennis Awards almost upon us, which means the Aussie summer is just around the corner. Here's what's coming up. Rafael Nadal back for a crack at AO 24.
So we could, just throwing it out there, get a Novak Djokovic versus Rafael Nadal first round match.
A wild card for Wozniacki and a new perspective on tennis.
It's really incredible that I get another chance of competing in Australia.
And Taylor Fritz intent on making it 2 from 2 for Team USA at the United Cup.
We definitely are going back wanting to defend the title and kind of just have to take it one at a time.
That's all ahead on the AO Show. As we record today's episode, we are 18 days away from Christmas, and that's starting to ring panic in the ears of many around here. Welcome to the roundtable today, Viv Christie from Australian Tennis Magazine. Welcome, Viv.
Great to be here. Thanks, John.
And Matt Trelope from OzOpen.com. Welcome, Matt.
Hey, John. Hey, Viv. Good to see you both.
Christmas plans coming together, or haven't even turned your attention to that yet, Viv?
Yeah, it's a little bit too far away for me, actually. It's usually a week before kind of planning situation.
I would be the same. I haven't even really thought about Christmas. What did you say? 18 days until Christmas, which means 22 days until the United Cup.
That's right.
It's coming very soon, the new season.
And we got to get to our respective cities, so that cuts short. I think I'm heading up to Sydney on Boxing Day. But it's better than a lot of the players who probably have to miss Christmas in the air or something, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a hectic time of year.
Well, today on the show, we're going to have a look through the full fields for the Brisbane International, which kicks off 31 December, and the Australian Open. The entry list has just been formalised, kicking off January 14. And later on, Matt, tell us who you're catching up with in this week's player interview.
I caught up with Caroline Wozniacki, our wildcard announcement for the AO. So that was a really good chat. Really exciting to get to talk to her, and yeah, looking forward to seeing what she can do in January.
Caroline Wozniacki to join us later. Now, the Brisbane International, Rafael Nadal is the big announcement that came through late last week, I think just before the weekend. A wild card to the Brisbane International, and that is a huge coup, Viv, for Brisbane.
Yeah, absolutely. What great news for Brisbane. Everybody's been hanging to know when Rafael Nadal's coming back, and now we have a definitive date. What a first day we could have at Brisbane. We've also got Naomi Osaka coming back, so great vibes all around for Brisbane, I think.
What did you think of the way he announced it with the Steven Spielberg-style video?
I wouldn't go that far, but it started off, obviously, with the look back to the reason he's been off tour for nearly a year, the injury at the Australian Open, which was really unfortunate. So it kind of started off on a somber note. But then when the black and white went into the colour, and then it was like, I'm back, I'm healthy, I'm announcing that I'm going to return in Brisbane. It was, it was great news. It's a long time away from the sport, so it'll be fantastic to have him back.
I got the sense that he was maybe tempering expectation a little bit, but at the same time, I don't think we'll be seeing Rafa unless he's fully ready to be back and thinking that he can do a lot of damage.
I think he has. You're right. I think he has tempered expectations. I read an interview where he said, I'm not sure if it was translated from Spanish, but he kind of said, I'm not putting as bigger expectations on myself, which I've played with for my entire career, and that I'm kind of, giving myself permission to go with the flow, go easy. But he said something like, be kinder to myself. And it's different language from Rafa. Yeah. So I think it is that tempering of expectations. He's 37. He's been out for a year. This is, even for someone who's struggled with injuries, this is uncharted territory for him. He'll be unseated in draws for the first time forever. He's been in the top 10 for 900 weeks or something.
Yes, 17 and a half years.
Yes. So this is, and I think the rest of the players are also going to be like, oh my goodness, I could get Rafael Nadal in the first round as a seed, which is something that's never been a thing. This is quite a different scenario, and expectations tempered for sure.
Yeah, I think a lot of the players are being asked about that this week since the announcement was made. It's going to make for a very interesting draw when an unseeded Nadal gets thrown into the mix.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's that sort of thing of the comeback stars and the established players and a whole new tennis landscape in some ways, because in the field you've also got Ben Shelton and Holger Rune, and so you've sort of got this wide spectrum of players.
So we could, just throwing it out there, get a Novak Djokovic versus Rafael Nadal first round match at the Australian Open.
Theoretically so.
Yes.
What a prospect.
Also up in Brisbane, among 9 Grand Slam champions in total, you mentioned Murray, I think, and Osaka. Sabalenka will be there, the number 2. Elena Rybakina will be there, the number 4. And we've also got Ostapenko, Azarenka, Kenin and Stevens. It's a mouthwatering lineup, Matt.
It's so good. There's just so many Grand Slam champions, so much talent. I just think when I hear the name Sabalenka and Rybakina, it just transports me back to the AO final. It was such a good match. Yeah. And they've played a couple of really good matches since then. That's becoming quite a nice rivalry. So yeah, when I saw that they were kind of the top of the women's entry list, I thought, imagine if we got that rematch again as a taster for the AO potentially. Brisbane's got a lot to look forward to.
Yeah. And Brisbane so often is a sign of what is to come at the Australian Open, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a harbinger.
I like that word.
I'm glad that you used that word.
Maybe I could call my cat Harbinger. I'm looking for a name. Anyway, get to that later. Naomi Osaka, what can we realistically expect from the former world number one, 4-time Grand Slam champ?
Well, again, I don't think Naomi would be targeting a comeback without thinking that she can do some real damage. I think as soon as Australia, to be honest. I know that she's been working really hard, going by her social media on the practice court, and she's looking really fit from what I've seen. So, yeah, nothing would surprise me.
Getting some serving tips I saw on social media. Serving tips, I say that in inverted commas, from our own Nick Kyrgios.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And imagine, Osaka's not struggling on serve to begin with. She's got one of the best serves in the game. So imagine if she can tweak it a little bit more with some tips from Nick. She's done that before with Nick. I remember there was something she posted and she was kind of sitting on the baseline. This might have been last year or the year before, kind of watching him serve. So clearly she likes Kyrgios, so maybe that's a model for hers, but hers is excellent. I agree with Viv. She looked amazing in those practice videos on social, very fit, striking the ball really well, and has a history of coming back with little match play. She's the type of player that seems to be able to hit the ground running with not many matches under her belt and can attain a high level. And she's only 26.
And it has to help coming back to a tournament that's, or venue that's been so successful for her as well.
Yeah. 2-time Australian Open champion. Good vibes here. Naomi could do big things. But again, it's draw dependent. She's going to be another one of these players who's unseeded. Oh, I can't wait for that Australian Open draw in January.
Well, I should also mention from a Brisbane perspective, 4 Aussies in that field, including the local lady Kim Birrell, plus Alexi Popper and Max Purcell and Jordan Thompson. But yes, turning our attention to the Australian Open, Aussie wildcards for Birrell, Gadecki, Preston, Duckworth, Polmans and Walton. And as we flagged off the top, Caroline Wozniacki has been awarded a wild card. And Viv, that makes for some very excited people in her camp, but also fans who are looking forward to welcoming her return to Melbourne for the first time in 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, Caro has always had some really great matches in Australia. She really had great results from the start in Melbourne. I think she made the 4th round on her debut as a teenager. So, it's always been a happy place for her. She's played some incredible matches here. We all remember 2011, I think it was, against Lina, that great semi-final, and then, of course, went on to win her first Grand Slam title here. So she will come back with only happy memories and lots of fans.
So, Matt, you had the privilege of an extended interview with her during the week. Tell us what she was like to interview and how you generally found her.
She was great and seemed obviously really excited to be returning to Australia. Made a point of saying she's got such happy memories there. Really looking forward to getting, it's a long time, 4 years that she hasn't played. That's where she drew the curtain on her career initially with another great match, even though she didn't win it. It was 7-5 in the third set against Ons Jabeur, which when you think about what Ons has gone on to do, that was a spectacular third round match. Yeah, so no, it was great to chat to her. It was really interesting to kind of find out what she's been doing because she hasn't played since the US Open. So that's quite a lot of time off court, but it's quite, from the sounds of things, it's quite strategic. And she's been working hard. The US Open gave her I know, I guess a bit of an indicator of where she sits currently. And she said she took away lessons of what she needs to work on for the next year. So it's very much this kind of, you know, the Australian Open's this kind of long range goal that's coming closer. So it was really interesting to talk to her about that. And yeah, she was really generous with her time.
She's been pretty smart about her comeback so far,
yeah.
I would suggest. So she's played three tournaments, made the fourth round at the US Open, beat Petra Kvitova along the way. So yeah, I think it's a, you know, lot to look forward to.
Well, let's hear it now. Matt's interview with Caroline Wozniacki.
So, Caro, yes, thanks so much for joining us. Really good to chat to you. I was just wondering, yeah, what have you been up to since we last saw you on court at the US Open?
A little bit of everything. My daughter started her little preschool early learning, so she's been doing that. I've been practicing a lot. We also went to the Bahamas on a little family trip vacation and enjoyed Thanksgiving there. We've seen the family. We've done a bit of everything, but just really trying to lay low, get in the best shape possible, obviously for the Australian Open coming up soon.
Yeah. How did you pull up after the US Open?
Surprisingly smooth. I think my first tournament was in Montreal and I played my first match and I thought I played surprisingly well for my first match back, but definitely I was playing back-to-back matches and the next day I was feeling very sore. It's a big difference practicing and playing practice sets from, you know, playing a real match. And that was a bit of a shock to the system. But then, you know, I got another couple of weeks in before the US Open and I felt great. I feel like I played some good tennis there and competed well and beat some great players. And I was a bit, you know, obviously disappointed I didn't beat Coco, but she played great. And obviously she ended up winning the tournament. But, you know, I think overall I could be very, very pleased with how I came back. My body held up great, which obviously is always a question mark when you haven't played for so long. And then on top of that, obviously I had two kids and basically didn't play tennis for 3 years. So didn't touch a racket. So it was great to be back. My body feels good. And I knew what I needed to work on after the US Open. And that's why I made the decision to just kind of hunker down and start really preparing my body and try and get in the best shape possible coming into next year.
And you said, yes, excited to return to Australia. We're very excited about that news too. First time in 4 years you'll be back at the Australian Open. Kind of what memories does that bring back and how excited are you? When you think about it, it's been 4 years since you've been at Melbourne Park. What will it be like to return?
It's really incredible that I get another chance of competing in Australia. I really thought when I retired in 2020 that was going to be my last tournament, my last match. And there was a reason why I decided to do it in Australia. It's because it's so special to me. I feel like I have so much support there. I obviously won my first Grand Slam there and it's just the happy slam. So that was why I made the decision. But, you know, lo and behold, 3 years later, I realized I still have something to give to the sport and my passion is still there. And I feel like I'm still young enough to give it one last try. And I'm really, really excited to be back in Australia. I mean, to bring the family there, my two kiddos, and for them to experience this incredible country, I'm just so, so thrilled. And obviously for me to play at one of the biggest events in the world in front of all these amazing fans, it's going to be incredible. And it's definitely going to be emotional coming back. And I'm really, really looking forward to it.
That's awesome. I think we have a lot of Australian listeners to this podcast. So yeah, I mean, do you have a little bit of a message for them? It's only five weeks away before the Australian Open starts. It's coming around so fast.
I can't believe that it's only 5 weeks away. It feels like after the US Open, I had so much time to prepare and all of a sudden it's really sneaking up on me. And I'm just so, so excited to be back. Melbourne is one of my most favorite cities in the world. And I can't wait to show it to my family and my kids. And then obviously I hope to play extremely well. It's obviously a tournament that I feel very comfortable at. I love the balls. I love the court and I love the fans. And I hope that I get a nice welcome back when I see everyone there, and I'm sure I will. It really is a special place. And I'm just so, excited to get another chance of playing on the big courts.
I just wanted to go a little bit back to the US Open you were talking about. You mentioned that obviously you lost to Coco Gauff, who went on to win the tournament. And that was actually really interesting because we got a so soon into your comeback, we got a bit of a, and you would have gotten a taste of playing literally one of the best players in the world that won a Grand Slam, and you were one set away from winning. With a little bit, it's obviously disappointing to lose, but with a bit of distance and time, what did you take away from that, and what did you make of playing Coco?
It was really great. I think for me, going into the first three tournaments and my comeback, I didn't really know what to expect. I wanted to kind of see, where's my game at? Where's my body at? And, you know, I hadn't played for 3.5 years. I hadn't played a competitive match in 3.5 years. And your body fully changes after a pregnancy. And I had two of them. So, you know, and back to back. And I just didn't know how everything was going to react, how I was going to feel once I was back out there and really competing. And to come back and really play great tennis, beating, obviously, Petra Kvitova, and playing really well. And, you know, I felt like I was right where I wanted to be. I think getting some practice matches in before the tournament really helped me just get the proper feel for the court and the balls and everything else. And then obviously playing Coco, who had been playing extremely well and felt like I was close to win that match. But, you know, I still just missed a couple of things I felt in my game and physically, where I was like, I know where I need to go. I know where I am. I know where I need and want to be. To be able to beat the best players in the world and on a consistent basis. And that's, I think, very encouraging that I wasn't very far away. And I'm very confident and comfortable coming into this new season, having played those three tournaments prior, and just knowing that my game is great. And now physically, I just needed to step it up a little bit more.
For sure. You've mentioned, obviously, having two kids. That's what's made your comeback so interesting and a little bit unusual. There's lots of comebacks on the women's tour, but almost all of them are after they've had one child. You've had two. So what kind of challenges or extra challenges might that have presented that makes your comeback a little different?
I don't think I appreciated how having one child was a lot less crazy, I think, in our household. My daughter, Olivia, she is amazing, but she is a fireball of energy, and she does not know how to walk. She only runs everywhere, and she tells everyone where to go and what to do. And I mean, she is amazing, but she's a lot. And James, our little one, he, you know, is the calm, chill, always happy little baby boy. And he's easy. But the two of them together, I mean, that is a full-time job. If I'm not on court or in the gym or getting treatment, you know that you can find me running around after the kids in one direction or the other. And I think sometimes I just look at my husband and I go, I don't think we appreciated how having one was a lot less hectic over here. But I love it. Our family is awesome. And I think, you know, obviously childbirth and the women's body obviously changes, and it's a lot getting that back into shape, not only how you feel, but also getting everything kind of back to where it used to be. And you know, it's easier to get hurt, but then after two children, I mean, that's a whole nother level. And for me, you know, obviously my fitness and my body when I'm coming back to play at the highest level has to be at 100%. And it's definitely been a challenge, you know, and having to learn to take baby steps and coming back and not rushing everything was for me mentally, you know, a little tough, because I've always been the person saying go, 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 and, you know, give it go 1,000 miles an hour all the time. But at the same time, I think I really also appreciate my body and what it's been able to do and how strong it is. And I think mentally I'm a lot stronger on the court. I think physically I've chosen to really build up some of the strength that a few places that were missing on my body. And I think, you know, really getting it into, I think, probably the best shape of my life, I think for me is one of the most impressive things for me, because that's something that I didn't know kind of where it was going to be and what was possible. And for me to feel as physically great as I do and strong as I do, I feel very proud of that.
Yeah, that's incredible. I was going to ask you another question about the fitness, because following you on social media when you were obviously, I think like during COVID, when you were having kids and you were retired, you seemed to keep fit. You seemed to stay active. So I was interested kind of like having kids and maintaining that, what kinds of things were you doing for your health and fitness in that period? And then how did it shift when you made the decision to come back to professional tennis? Because I'm assuming you would have had to move into a different kind of training.
Absolutely. For me, I love being in the gym. I love staying fit. I love working out. And even throughout my pregnancies, I was working out. So that was always a priority. I feel a lot better mentally when I do get a sweat in. And, you know, obviously I had the babies back to back. So I was basically pregnant for 2 years straight. So it was a lot of walking and making sure I got a lot of steps in. And I like to do a lot of yoga and Pilates during that time. I also did some weight training, but you know, something that was a lot easier on my joints as well. Whereas after having the babies and doing some rehab on everything, I think getting back into the cardio and knowing that I, you know, want to compete at the highest level in tennis, I needed to really step up my cardio game. And that was something, because I had the strength throughout my pregnancies, that actually was somewhat easier than I thought. It was definitely very hard in the beginning. But I quickly, my body quickly realized, okay, we're back in the groove. I can do this. And it was also interesting for me because not only with the two kids, but with my rheumatoid arthritis, you know, that's something that I'm battling on a regular basis and a regular day-to-day basis as well. But again, I just really feel like I've matured a lot mentally and just learning kind of what works for me and what doesn't and how much I can push myself and when it's time to say stop. And I think I've gotten a lot more confident and comfortable saying I can't do anymore right now. You know, we need to stop. We need to take it easy. I can do recovery. I can do other things, but I can't push harder right now. And that's okay. And that's also why I've given myself more time to really get to the shape that I wanted to get to. And yeah, it's different. We're on the phone right now and talking here and it's 8 p.m. and we're going to be done, I don't know, in 15 minutes, whatever it may be. And I'm going to the gym after because I put my kids to bed. And that was the time I had today. I had practice this morning, tennis, and then I had physio kind of during the kids' nap time. And I didn't have time to go to the gym. So I'm going in a little bit. So those are things that I also never appreciated before, how much time I had on my hands to really train and work out whenever I wanted. And now it's a lot of days it's on my kids' schedules as well.
Yeah, it just forces you to be flexible. And it's like, hey, if it's going to be 9 o'clock workout, it's better than not at all, right?
Exactly. I used to look at the people, you know, when I was in my car driving, it was dark outside and people out running. And I would look at now my husband and say, what are people doing at 9 p.m., 10 p.m. running and working out? And now I totally get it. Now I understand. Now I'm one of those people.
You got it. Yeah, you guys just got to do it on the kid's schedule. I've got one or two more questions, Caro. I wanted to know, I read your Vogue piece, obviously. That was the comeback announcement. And you said, one day late last year, I found myself setting up a couple of sessions on the court. And I just wondered what caused that little spark to come back and you found, oh, I want to set up a hit. Like, yeah, where did that come from?
Honestly, it was more from boredom of doing the same things in the gym and my yoga and Pilates. And I was just like, let me find my rackets. And I found them in our storage room and I dusted a couple of them off. And my friend who I've been hitting with on a regular basis throughout my career, I texted him and I said, hey, can we set up a once a week hit just so that I can get a sweat going and a little bit of cardio? And you know, I know I can hit the ball well and it will get me my heart rate up and quickly. And that's kind of how it started. It was really innocent and I didn't really have any other motives other than just trying to get back into shape after James was born. And I think tennis has always been such a huge part of my life and I was ready. I needed a break after playing for so many years and I didn't miss hitting balls at all. And probably in 3 years, I hit 3 or 4 times. That's it. And all of a sudden, I just go, wow, I miss hitting a clean ball. I miss hitting it in the middle of the racket. Let's just go out there, get a sweat going, get the timing and just have fun with it. And it was a completely different mindset. And I think that's also why I felt like I hit the ball better than ever because there was no pressure, no reason to stress over anything. And I think that's why it felt so comfortable and so good being out there again.
And I hope that's continued into the comeback, right? That more freedom and less stress. Do you feel less stressed?
Absolutely. I think seeing tennis from the outside and doing some commentating and all of that, I got a completely different perspective on tennis. Also having my kids, and they don't care. They're just thrilled that I'm home from work. I tell Olivia, I have to go to work. And she goes, okay, but when you come back, can you play with me? And she doesn't care if I won or lost a match. She just wants to hang out and she's thrilled to see me. So it just puts things in perspective. I'm so fortunate to be able to play the game that I love and that I'm pretty good at. And I think for me, having that perspective of it and enjoying playing in front of a big crowd and being able to play the big tournaments, it just gives me the freedom to know, okay, you know what? I don't know how long I have left to play, but when I'm out there, I'm going to give it my all. What I've worked on, I know what I'm capable of, and I'm going to give it 100%. And if someone is going to beat me, then congratulations, you were better than me on that day, and I'm going to go home and work harder. But I think having that great balance in my life has really, I think, attributed to the fact that I feel like I'm playing some amazing tennis and a lot more free.
That's really nice to hear. I like that. Thanks so much for your time, Caroline. This has been a really great chat. Congratulations on your Australian Open wildcard. It'll be really good to see you here in January.
Thank you so much. I can't wait. I'm really, really excited about it.
Fantastic interview, Matt. Congratulations on that.
Oh, thanks.
Really good stuff. And thank you to Caroline for coming on the show. We will be catching up with more tennis stars between now and the start of next season as the AO show comes to an end for season 5. It's hard to believe. This is episode 62. We've got a few more before the end of the season. Then we go for season 6.
Congrats, John. That's quite a record that you're amassing.
Huge amount of work.
Thank you very much. Season 6 will begin on 28th of December, the day before the United Cup starts. I'll be in Sydney, but the action will kick off in Perth. And Group C is the one we're putting a spotlight on today, Matt. Australia, USA, and Great Britain. Taylor Fritz, we spoke to during the week. He's going to be leading Team USA alongside Jess Pegula. And here's what he had to say about their title defense.
Yeah, it was a really fun week. It was such a good way to, start last year with winning the event, winning something for your home country. I think it's a lot of fun, one, because everyone's excited to kind of be back after the off season and be back playing. And it's also always fun to be playing a team event with other people on your team, because we're so used to just playing by ourselves all the time. We definitely are going back wanting to defend the title, and kind of just have to take it one at a time. And yeah, get ourselves, I think, the main goal is to get ourselves out of the group first and then get ourselves to Sydney, and then, then we'll go from there.
So make no mistake, Team USA is going for back-to-back.
Yeah. They had such a good time at the United Cup, the initial United Cup. That was a real thing that came out of their squad, the camaraderie between all of them. And we managed to get an interview with Jess Pegula a couple of weeks ago, and she talked about, like, they'd stayed in touch since the United Cup, following each other's results. I think there was like a WhatsApp group or a text message group or something. And she said that Taylor Fritz asked her to play the United Cup again. And she basically said, I'll come back and defend our title. So yes, it's a different format. It's not the same squad returning, but it's headlined by the same two players, Fritz and Pegula, two top 10 players, which makes the US team one of the strongest ones in the competition. So returning will give them, automatically good vibes. And what a fun group. Group C, it's like the Grand Slam Nations group, Great Britain, Australia, US. I think that's a really fun kind of subplot.
Shame they all can't go through to the finals. Yeah. France was there.
France, yeah, exactly. But yeah, who knows what will happen there. But yeah, really excited to see how they go, because they were a really potent combination in 23.
It's going to make it more kind of up grabs for any team, because one person can just win their singles and then have a really good performance in the mixed doubles and basically just win off of that. I think last year it gave us a very big advantage with our team being so strong at the two spots. We never even had to come down to a mixed doubles deciding match. And I think it's going to be different this year. The mixed doubles is going to play a much bigger part in it, because, with three matches instead of five, I think the results can kind of just go anyway, I feel like.
So Viv, now only having to win two matches to get through, changes the complex of the United Cup this year.
Yeah, it puts a really strong emphasis on mixed doubles, doesn't it? So I think it's going to be really exciting to see the players come out and just fight so hard in the mixed doubles. And talking of USA, of course, you've got Jess Pegula, who we know is such a great doubles player as well as singles. She's one of the few players that sort of is up the top of the rankings in both disciplines. So makes it very, very interesting.
And we don't get that many opportunities to see high quality mixed doubles. I mean, it's the four Grand Slams, United Cup, and the Olympics every 4 years. Like, it's really, yeah. So this is when it kind of is centered more and it becomes potentially more decisive in lots of ties. I think that's cool. And then there's this added plot line of there being the Olympics, and a couple of the teams are thinking of the United Cup as, they're thinking forward to Paris 2024. And like, if they can get practice and gel a combination at the United Cup and do well, that could potentially resonate.
And there's some fascinating dynamics in that Group C in terms of doubles. You know, you've got Storm Hunter, who's now the number one, world's number one player for Australia. And, Alex Diminor will potentially face his girlfriend, Katie Bolter.
Yeah, which is crazy. Doubles. And then she could potentially be playing with Norrie, who we remember is one of Diminor's best friends on tour as well. So there's a fun dynamic between Australia and Great Britain. But then Australia too, we don't exactly know who the combination will be. We have some really great players on the men's double side, like Matt Ebden as well. So there's some selection conundrums potentially too. It's exciting.
Well, no selection conundrums for Team USA, according to Taylor Fritz.
I'm definitely not going to let anybody else play. I definitely plan on it being me and Jess when it comes down to it, playing mix.
So Team USA begins its campaign on the 31st of December during the day against Great Britain, and then they have Australia on New Year's Day. The Aussies to get underway on Friday, December 29, the night session against Great Britain. Get your tickets now, unitedcup.com. Well, just before we wrap up, we should touch on the next-gen ATP finals last week. Everyone was sort of had an asterisk next to Arthur Fies to take that one out, but young man from Serbia by the name of Hamad Medjevic took him down in five fast four sets, Matt.
Yes, there's one of many innovations at the Next Gen Finals that's become a kind of signature of that event. So how many Next Gen Finals have we had now? About five or six of them. So Hamad joins a very illustrious list. Yeah, thank you. We've had winners like Jannik Sinner, Stefanos Tsitsipas. I think Alex Diminor made it a final or two there. It is another one of those ones that potentially predicts what a player can go on to do. I mean, all of those players have either gotten into the top 10 or close to it. And he played a big game, an exciting game. The way he won the final with that booming ace down the tee. But yeah, he's definitely got a bright future and also some really interesting Serbian tennis connections. Coached by Viktor Troicki and I think mentored by Novak Djokovic. So
that's pretty handy, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So he's definitely one to watch.
And Novak has also, he's supported him, for quite a long time throughout his career as well, sort of since his younger days. So he's got some pretty powerful support there.
A glimpse into the future of men's tennis. Well, let's have a glimpse into the next 2 weeks of these two panellists here. What's happening for Christmas?
I'll be heading up to visit some family in country Victoria. It's always a kind of hectic time for us, but a very enjoyable time. And then, I'll be heading up to Brisbane shortly afterwards. Nice.
Mine's pretty relaxed. I'm lucky my family's all in Melbourne, so it's quite local for me and quite calm. And then I'm staying on in Melbourne. So we'll be watching all the United Cup and Brisbane International action from here. But keeping an eye on what's coming up with the Australian Open. What about you, John?
Thank you. So hoping someone would ask. No, we pick up our new kitten, Socks, next week.
Your kitten, Socks, or your kitten is named Socks? Not Harbinger.
I have to check that now. I thought we were getting a kitten. No, we are getting a kitten called Socks.
Very exciting time Saturday. In your life.
Yeah. So, but then I'm heading off to Sydney a few days later. So
hopefully there's a cat sitter.
Yeah, exactly. Not ideal timing from that perspective, but I hope she likes tennis because I'm going to leave the channels of Nine on.
Cats love tennis.
My cat loves tennis.
Yeah. They get very fixated on it moving on the screen. And I think the contrast in the lines
makes for some great social content.
Yeah.
Good. Well, I'll keep that in mind and keep a camera rolling in the background just in case. That's all for this week's episode of the AO Show. Join us again next week for the latest tennis news, views and interviews as we announce the Newcomb medalist. Happy birthday this week to David Goffin and AO 2022 finalist Danielle Collins. If you'd like to get in touch, you can contact us via ozopen.com/listen or email the AO Show at tennis.com.au. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. While you're there, why not consider leaving a rating or review so more fans can discover the AO Show.